Coming up on Philosophy Talk.
I could dance with you till the cows come home. On second thought, I'd rather dance with the cows till you come home.
We all make hasty decisions. Second guessing helps us avoid the consequences of them.
Darling, you got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go?
If you second guess yourself and your first guess turns out right, won't you just feel like a fool?
If you don't second guess yourself and your first guess turns out to be wrong, won't you feel like a fool?
I just want you to check out Mrs. Barlow's chart. I'm always second guessing myself when it comes to interstitial lung disease.
Oh, then you should definitely handle this yourself there, Brittany.
Should I stay or should I go?
What good is a Monday morning quarterback?
A little presumptuous of a first officer to second guess his captain's judgment.
Our guest is Sherry Rouse, author of Tracking Truth, Knowledge, Evidence, and Science.
Second guessing ourselves.
Coming up on Philosophy Talk.
Should I stay or should I go?
This is Philosophy Talk, the program that questions everything.
Except your intelligence. I'm John Perry.
And I'm Ken Taylor. We're coming to you from the Mars Theater in Berkeley, the Bay Area's breeding ground for new performance.
Our thinking originates at Philosopher's Corner on the Stanford campus across the bay. That's where Ken and I occasionally teach philosophy.
Welcome, everyone, to Philosophy Talk. Today, it's second-guessing ourselves.
Well, Ken, you want to know my view about second-guessing? Don't do it. It's like Sir Alyssa says in the Game of Thrones. Leadership is all about getting second-guessed by every clever little twat that has a mouth. But a leader starts second-guessing himself, that's it. That's the end.
John, but even leaders sometimes make rash judgments and uninformed choices. I know you've got to agree that we would all have been better off had Bush and Company done a little second-guessing of themselves when it came time to their disastrous decision to invade Iraq, for example.
Well, who's to say they would have gotten it better the second time around? They probably would have invaded Australia. Besides, you start down that path and you'll soon be second-guessing your second guesses, and that, you know, it could go on forever.
Well, but I'm not suggesting that you should never stick to your beliefs and decisions. But that doesn't mean you should always stick to them either. It's not an all-or-nothing thing, John.
Have you got some nice, neat mathematical formula for deciding when it's a good idea to second-guess yourself? Personally, I doubt that there could be such a thing.
I think you should reconsider those doubts, John.
Ha!
Let me give you an example. Suppose you catch a glimpse of some person in the distance. You think it might be me. Suppose you're pretty sure, but you're not 100% certain. Maybe, just to give it a number, you're 70% certain.
Well, I don't want to burst your bubble, Ken, but you're a fairly distinctive-looking fellow. I mean, you're pretty hard to mistake.
Okay, play along with me, though, just for a second. Okay, later on, I tell you that it wasn't me that you saw. Now, are you going to just stick to your original belief? Isn't it reasonable? Isn't it fully rational now for you to reduce your confidence, maybe all the way down to zero, that it was me you saw? It wasn't me. Now, you should
know. I know. I probably just figure you were lying. I mean, probably I saw you at some very intimate dinner, staring longingly at some cute girl who wasn't your wife, and you
don't want me to forget the whole thing. Don't go there. Look, my point is that sometimes our confidence can be less than complete. When we get more evidence, we should be willing to change our degree of belief, up or down, in light of that new evidence. And look, if I told you that it really was me that you saw, wouldn't your confidence shoot up, and wouldn't it be rational for it to shoot up all the way from 70 up to 100%? Come on.
Well, Ken, I don't really think you're talking about second-guessing oneself. You're talking about just reconsidering old beliefs in the light of new evidence, pro or con. Now, rational people do that. I even do it sometimes. But what rational people don't do is what I would call second-guessing, which is you make a decision based on evidence, and then all of a sudden, based on no evidence whatsoever, you reconsider. Once the evidence is in, you've made up your mind, stick to your guns, full speed ahead. Don't go changing your mind just because you think you might possibly be wrong.
But look, John, What if that belief that you might possibly be wrong is itself based on evidence? Not on evidence about whether I was in that restaurant or not, but on evidence about your own degree of reliability. What about that?
I don't get you.
Well, suppose that you found out, I don't know, that your glasses had been toyed with and that now they had a tendency to distort your vision. What about that?
I guess a pretty far-fetched scenario. So I take my glasses off. Oh, it's Justin Bieber. No,
but look, it makes my point. It makes my point. If you found out that your vision was being distorted, wouldn't it make sense to change your degree of confidence in your belief that it was me that you saw? Even though you got no new direct evidence as to whether I was there or not, you got evidence about yourself.
Well, but look, I mean, everyone all the time is subject to some sort of distorting influence when they draw a conclusion or make a decision. You can't get away from it. If you let your confidence be undermined by this possibility, it leads to self-doubt, skepticism, and inaction. You won't be an effective human being
John,
like me.
John, I think you're just painting a stubborn refusal to reconsider as some sort of epistemic virtue or something.
And you're painting a spineless indecisiveness as an epistemic virtue.
Well, look, it's obvious I'm not going to get you to reconsider without a little help. So we sent our roving philosophical reporter, Natalie Jones, to find out what happens when we second-guess ourselves in situations where real results are on the line. She files this report.
This is a test.
Take out your number two pencils.
This is only a test.
Have you ever taken a test and put down an answer, then gone back and second-guessed yourself? You almost change it, but then you think, maybe I should stick with my gut. That's always right. Right?
It seemed like go with your first instinct was out there and widely believed by people, yet we wondered whether this was actually as good a strategy as you would believe given how widely accepted it was.
In 2005, Derek Wirtz was a psychology grad student at the University of Illinois, Champaign-Urbana. He and his colleague, Justin Kruger, decided to look into this urban legend. The researchers asked students if they believed the gut instinct strategy, and a majority did. Then they combed through decades of research and found the results just didn't match up.
Overwhelmingly, research on answer changing suggested the opposite of go with your first instinct. It suggested that when people change answers, they usually benefit from doing so. That is, most answer changes are from wrong to right, rather than from right to wrong, which is what you would expect if go with your first instinct was an ideal strategy.
All right, well, let's get into it. Let's jump to page 67.
At a recent test prep class in San Francisco, many students still believe the maxim. And student Kyle Sung automatically associates uncertainty with a wrong answer.
I mean, when I'm pretty confident, then I'm pretty sure I got the question right. But if I'm unsure, I most likely got it wrong.
Wirtz, now a professor at East Carolina University in North Carolina, found people are more scared of changing from right to wrong than being wrong to begin with.
You think one answer is right, but then you start to think of changing your answer. And you do change your answer, only to find out that your first instinct was right all along. And how frustrating would that feel? You had the right answer and you foolishly changed it.
But finding out later that we could have changed from a wrong answer to a right one is also frustrating. Why don't we remember those times as well? Wirtz has a theory.
It's a mistake that you made because of an inaction instead of a mistake that you made because of an action. And it's easier for us to mentally undo actions than to sort of mentally undo inactions.
So how can we have the best of both worlds? Get the right answer without driving ourselves crazy with second guessing. I asked Colin Gruenwald, who is the director of ACT and SAT programs at the test prep company Kaplan.
Good reasons why you would change your answers would include if you finished early and you had the opportunity to go back and say, oh, wait a minute, I was thinking about this, but I should have been thinking about that. That's great. That would be where you realized something you didn't know before.
Gruenwald and his colleagues tell students they're required to go back through and check their answers if they have extra time. But they should avoid changing answers for bad reasons.
One of the most common I know of is just the fear of seeing a pattern in your answer choices. Students are very conditioned to think, if there's a pattern, I must have done something wrong.
Patterns do randomly happen, he says, and mean nothing. Gruenwald also tells students to avoid thinking that they're being tricked or trapped. That's an emotional response, rather than one based on the question itself. Still, in test-taking, second-guessing is often a luxury.
The vast majority of students will never change an answer because they won't have the opportunity to or they won't have the desire to.
But for the ones who do and can question themselves without letting doubt spiral out of control, research shows they might be rewarded with a few more right answers. For Philosophy Talk, I'm Natalie Jones.